about esoterics around the world, you know?
Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
And welcome, and thank you everybody for listening in. Once again, this is Andrew Fetterer, When Pigs Fly. Well, it's a weird, unusual day. It's that change from the June into July. We've had unusual weather here in Los Angeles, especially in Santa Monica, and where I'm presently located. But I hope everybody out there is having a glorious day. I know people have been going through a lot of strife through economics specifically. And I never know that a lot of things and issues around politics and all that stuff, sometimes people say, oh, screw it. I decided to go into this issue, one aspect, and I think, and I term you, if everybody sees it, talking about the verb that we are, and we in relationship to the reality of a lot of things, and it goes into many aspects of the way we perceive things, and problem is a lot of times we perceive too many things in the wrong category, and we've been sort of conditioned to that way from lifetime to lifetime, and we carry these perspectives with us. Unfortunately, those perspectives that we carry with us are actually usually with obscure glasses. And one of those is which is that we look at things too much within a finite capacity, which is sort of illogical when you look at the reality of our universe being as infinite capacity. And with this, the understanding, if we had our understanding of our universe with its infinite capacity, then it would be understood what it is, for what it is. Now, a lot of times we talk about concepts, and before I get into the aspect that I'm going to get into, and I think I may have elaborated about this, because somebody had asked me one time on a one-on-one about concepts, and then before I got into them, then I realized they're taking concept as concrete for what they are. When something's being described as in a metaphor, they're getting too caught up into it. Concepts are just what they are. They're just concepts. They're basically methods of explanation within our finite language, in which in itself is limited to our preconceived notions and perspectives. So instead, concepts in reality are much like water. They're like sort of like, you know, you're jumping in a swimming pool or it's taking a shower. It's to get you to feel what they are and to understand them. So when people explain a concept to you, they'll do it in a metaphorical way or a describing way or a drawing way. But a lot of people, unfortunately, take the concepts because they're looking at it as concepts almost like finite, from A to B to Z. You know, they actually look at them A, B, C, D, as opposed they're really just like flowing water. And that's what I mean. The concepts are like flowing in all situations. Any concepts are usually you can put in a glass or freeze or chill them, boil them, which also affect other things. And they have no limitations by utilizing these concepts. I find this really common among some when people try to study certain esoterics specifically, like in Kabbalah when they're learning the Sefarot, they're getting, oh, what about the Sefarot, what this is, and the Hosed and the Yod. A lot of these blurred things. They're just concepts, and people look them as absolute. And there's a lot of gray area. That's why the problem I find out, and that's why I feel it's really important, indicative to explain that. Concepts are without limitations the way they're transponded to each other. And so if someone were to mold them in one's own point of view, which they can be by themselves, become misleading because you're just molding it and assuming that is, like, in concrete, the finite thing. Concepts in reality, like I said, should be looked upon as an explanation of an experience. You know, let me give you an example. If you were to like eat an orange, how would you explain what that orange tastes like? What is that? Tell me what that orange is. And when you tell me what that orange is, everything you describe about that orange is going to be out of the action of the orange. You're going to show me the orange, and you're going to look, tell me, oh, look at it, it's orange, or the color is orange. But what is it? I'm looking at that orange. It's a, I'm doing something in action and looking at the orange. I'm experiencing the orange. Holding the orange, that's an action. You're explaining the experience of that orange. Tasting the orange, you're describing this, becomes a concept of explanation, which now becomes the is the concept. You're basically, concept is an explanation of the experience. It's all it is. And you, it's utilizing metaphors to explain it. This is what happens in esoterics. You will hear people describe whether it's angelic guides or things around the universe, and they'll have concepts. But problem is, a lot of people, and this happens from very get-go when student people start studying and learning the esoterics. Okay, or like, well, I'll give you an example. Right now, at present, from my own personal perspective right now, I have a pretty good, I feel a strong understanding of a lot of issue systems, which is under the guideline, what people would say, Kabbalah, okay? Because I studied under a Kabbalist, and I'm in the Kabbalistical way of learning things. I find the same things which I've been learning under Taoism for the last quite a few years. And I find a very commonality, in fact, it's almost exactly identical, of concepts, explanations, which is what I find in a lot of things. A lot of the experiences of the concepts are pretty much the same. They use different methods or different concepts, but at the end, they're telling you about the same experience of that orange. Right now, I'm talking, I've been looking at reading I Ching, for example, and been studying it very slowly because I'm trying to experience it. By experience, I'm learning it, but by learning it, I'm gazing back and I reflect upon what they're really trying to gaze upon you. This happens when you study a lot of esoteric books. A lot of people will study and read them, like word by word, trying to memorize the concept, and instead of saying back and go, what's this overall trying to tell me? You can look at the individual concepts, but then you reflect back to them, and that is what your experiences, and that's what your understanding of the concepts become. It's your experiences coming out of them. And you're going to find out why I'm getting to this experience of the concepts. It relates a lot to us as our souls. So in a sense, basically, a concept is just a description of the relating of to the experience of the wisdom or the experience of that description. So you're experiencing some wisdom. If somebody tells you some, you learn some knowledge or whatever from a teacher, or read something or experience something, even that in itself is a description of what things are. You're describing that situation, so you become aware of what that is. You are you're describing the experience of it. So either way, it becomes beholden to somewhere, somehow, in relation to an experience. You're experiencing it in some way. And that experience, by the way, is what? An action. It's not a, and what is that action? It's not something concrete. It is not a finite thing. Is an experience finite? No. It's very blurry. It's an approximation, right? When you experience something, it's a feeling. There's a lot of things that go behind it. Your eyes, whatever your perceptions, your feelings and things, seeing, hearing, whatever. Whatever your mechanical basis of your human experience is, as well as your spiritual base, there's also experiencing. There's a plethora of things, of information that you're having. Some of these are being filtered. Some you're not even aware of that you're receiving. Some people, I remember reading, like people think there's mind control and, you know, other things. But what is, who? How do you know if it's, you're allowing being mind controlled or are being mind controlled? It's like the system of, I was talking to somebody couple weeks ago, actually. This friend of mine, Liz and I, remember when we were talking about hypnosis. And I was saying that I believe, this is my perception, I feel, and maybe I'm incorrect, but I feel that, and I was told this too, and I felt it was actually undue that somebody goes through hypnosis, it's actually giving up their willpower. Because by the action of the hypnosis, you're what? You're giving up. So in every action, you're giving up something. So that is the experience of it. And when I talk of an experience, again, it's very blurry. It's a pragmatization. This is the reality. This is why you cannot say things are finite, you know, one point A to point B. I remember I had, like I said, I had one professor on my show, an astrophysicist, and he was saying, oh, the world is so infinite, so infinite, so infinite. And then when he got down to a lot of issues, I asked him, well, if things are so infinite, you know, then why do we utilize finite ways of measurement and determination and experiments in a finite methodology? Determine things that in actuality are infinite. If you know, I'll give you an example. How do we do an experiment? We do an experiment by we give a hypothesis, right? A hypothetical situation. We then carry out the experiment itself. We do something to cause A to create B. And we what? We observe it. And based upon the observation, we determine whether that is really what's going on, and that's the result, and then that becomes our summation. That is normally the experiment. It's very concrete. It's like taking, I'm going to take salt and put it in water. What happens with the salt? You know, what happens if I put an agent in the salt? So it's like, what happens to different things? If you put different chemicals and reactions, so you observe them of what really is happening, and therefore you determine based upon that action. But in reality, there's more to it than just our eyes observing as we know it. We cannot see energy. We can only observe the effects of energy. Sometimes we'll see an effect of energy by it's the heat, something boiling, a fire heating up. We see effects of energy. We do not actually see the energy itself. But we know it exists, right? And everything is energy. So here comes, I'll get into the basic of it. So anyway, getting back to the concepts, as I've explained, is based upon your experience of that. Just like the experience of the concepts within an experiment. You're experimenting an issue, and therefore you become, from your experience, that you come out with your concepts. And those concepts aren't concrete. They're like a blur or approximation. A logarithm, if you want to call it. Somewhere there, it's like guessing where the electrons are spinning around, you know, the protons and the neutrons. Nobody knows exactly the orbit of the electrons. They're sort of an approximation. They know they're somewhere. It's not exactly an orbit either. It's not even a true orbit. They don't even really know. They only can guess where they probably, maybe, could be. Which is like all things, isn't it? Now, most of you will say, well, wait a second, I see you physically. Yeah, because you're now physically watching and seeing me through the reflection, for example, of light reflecting off of my molecules into your eyes. So you are experiencing the visual image of me. But do you see my voice? No, you hear my voice. But you can't see the energy around me. You can't see my thoughts, but they're there. You maybe use some extraterrestrial ability to understand them. and relate to them. But again, that's in the, out of an experience of them. We try to use our perceptual things to nature to experience the energy. Now, everybody is pretty familiar with E, I hope everybody is, E equals MC squared. And that is relative to the relative theory behind Einstein. This is what's a really, really sort of amazing, because I think that's like around over almost 100 years old, right? What is E equals MC squared? It's basically energy equals mass times its constant. And what's that mean? What is mass? Mass is matter. Mass is what you think of the protons, anything, or electrons, you know, the whole gambit of, you know, molecules, matter. Now, energy is equal to that. That's how, like, you know, when you split an atom, meaning there's energy release. And by the way, energy is never a loss. It's simply consistently converted from one form to another. That's a, we know that is pretty much of a fact. So if that applies from one kind of energy, it's all energy is like that. It's always consistently converting one form to another. So what are you physically? Let's just look at you, what you can actually visually, let's not talk about your soul or anything like that. You look at your physical hand and your body and everything, you're really basically a matrix of energy because you're matter, right? Energy equals you times the constant squared. So, I mean, you can technically blow up. There has been people, obviously, blow up. Your body is an ever-changing form of energy. People have seen, you know, when you do the, have your aura checked out, that's an energy flexing around your body, or your etheric body, you want to call it that, a part of your soul. You have a soul, multi-layer soul, and by the way, again, concepts. That is part of your body and part of you. And so what are you? You're basically energy. And what does energy happen to do? It moves around, right? Now, let's get energy, everything, in fact, I'd like to get back to the understanding into the details of energy. And everything in the universe is, in reality, merely just energy, as Einstein has obviously proposed with his relativity explanations. You are, then, energy. Your cells are made of atomic energy, for example. You have electrical magnetic energy running through your system, through your nerves. You have pulses that's happening throughout your body. It's one reason why you have a lot of water. You're basically water because you're a conduit of electromagnetic systems that are running around your body, of electricity running around your body. I mean, that's how your body functions, with electricity. That's the yin and yang. And there's multiple layers of forms of energy. You have heat that's coming off of your body. It has to be stabilized. Remember, if you get too hot, what happens? Have a fever, you get too cold, what happens? There's no level amounts. There is an unlimited amount of dimensions of energy. I mean, from even gravitational, which is a question of gravitational energy right now, questioning if that's real. They're not sure if that is real existence or not. There's a question of, well, questioning theories now, but who knows? There is electromagnetic energy. We've observed that with our experiences of it. We have observed thermal energy, mechanical energy, kinetic energy. We are aware that there's this thing called dark energy. Or based upon our assumption of dark energy is the reverse opposite of the gravitational forces. But then we also know that dark energy makes up 95% of, with along with dark matter, of the universe. So basically, this is per several physicists I've spoken to and even had on my show and acknowledged it, said that dark energy, dark energy and dark matter make up 95% of the universe, so therefore, guess what? We only know, what, 5%? Anyway, that tells you the perspective of what we really know. Of course, there's nuclear energy and so on and so on. There's so many types of energy that there may not even be apparent due to our limitations of our own perceptions, but still exists. As in reality, the universe is infinite. So there's an infinite amount of capacities of energy. And in fact, we do know, or think, I think, rather say, know, understand, or aware of, that all energy exists and it cannot simply be destroyed, but only converted from one form to another. This being said, you are energy, physical as well as spiritual, esoteric forms. I mean, think about it. What are you? What are you really? I mean, think about it. The 21 grams of sin leaves your body when you die. A form of matter that we have to weigh up because we need something finite in order to stick it in our brain to understand it. So we can draw a picture of it. So we can make a circle and make sure that the round peg fits in that round circle instead of a square peg. In reality, we are all energy. So is our soul energy. Therefore, you can never be destroyed or die in that capacity. You don't cease to exist. You will always exist in one form or another. That is a reality. You don't just wither away. You don't just die and your energy form go someplace and stay. Maybe go someplace. Maybe it is to heaven. Maybe it is to hell. Maybe hell is heaven. Hell and heaven is hell. That's based on perspective. Anyway. I mean, there's no limitation. And why is really important to understand why I'm getting to that we are energy? Because what is really energy doing? It's heat, it's changing its movement, right? In reality, in our universe, everything is consistently moving on a constant basis. And since our souls are constantly moving, what are we in reality? We're not a you. We're not a thing. We're not a finite item. We're not a noun. Even though we use those nouns as verb, but in reality, we're a verb. We're a constant movement. We're a constant of change. We're changing and moving no matter. Even if you think you're sleeping and not moving at all, your cells are moving around. Your blood, your soul, your energy, there's constant movement. Even when they say, was it Calvin Zero, when atoms don't supposedly move at that point, when there's absolutely no movement, in reality, there's still movement. It's only what we observe those atoms of not moving around. If they don't move, but the electrons going around them, they're moving around. So there's always movement. That's a fact. And that's giving you concepts of observation. But like I said, there's always movement. There's always movement and affecting the movement of other energy in one shape or form. And this, like I said, includes your soul. I mean, your soul is energy. That is why we have problems redefining what we are. We look ourselves in the mirror and see our face in the mirror. And the problem is we don't see ourselves for who we are, is because you cannot see your soul in a mirror. Because you're trying to look at yourself as your eyes. You are energy. Can you see energy again? You can't. You can see the reaction of energy. the reaction of the energy affecting your body. The energy that you are reflecting and affecting, let's say, like a water that heats a glass up, the energy that explodes. You know, when you split an atom bomb, a nuclear thing, or radiation, you do not see it. You observe the reaction to it. We cannot really understand. Visually, we get down to electrons. Like I said, we can guess where they are. We can't actually see where they are. We never have. Maybe one day we will. And even within those, we'll see more things involved. Because even electrons produce energy. There's energy. Our eyes are converting one energy to another energy. And there's different elements of energy. You don't see energy. You cannot only observe the reactions of it. And that's what we're seeing, the reactions of things within our universe. Because all things are energy. And with our little limitations of our perceptions, we assume that the reactions are of finite capacity. But in reality, there's more of an infinite things happening. This is our problem when we've limited ourselves, both in our esoterics, our spirituality, and within sciences, which is hating on a collision course, and perhaps will make it so humanity realize for who humanity is. If humanity did, that would change things, which I'll get into. But getting back within with the solus of being energy. You know, there's within the holy scriptures of the Zohar and the books of light, it says like the universe was created out of utterances, or more correctly, utterances, which is sound, which is implying movement or a frequency of movement. It is the manifestations and existence of movement. This is why, for example, which is really, I find quite unique, in Hebrew, which is, of course, utilized obviously in, you know, the basics of in Kabbalism, but uses the word, the root of all words in Hebrew, which I find fascinating, is the poel. And poel literally means a verb. There's three of them. You know, three letters in each is the root of all words in Hebrew. You can add different letters attached to it to make it more of like a noun, but its root is a verb. That's a fact. It's called a shorsh, by the way, which means Hebrew, in Hebrew root. And then, which is, I find quite interesting, because this reflects that all elements are of action, not finite, and based upon approximation, which I find very compatible with the understandings and concepts of quantum physics. And this is why there is a correlation between Kabbalism, for example, quantum physics, Sufi Islam, Taoism, I Ching, some aspects of, I would say, within Buddhism, and a lot of aspects within spirituality, within Native American beliefs, and, you know, some aspects of Christianity, taken away, looked into a more universal approach and the infinite way of looking things, in an esoteric way. I mean, in the Kabbalistical references, though, with of the Torah being the five books of Moses, metaphorically, there are references within Kabbalism of being that the Torah, the first five books of Moses, because they say that it's like it was the voice of God. It is often the use of the thing, the Lashon, the tongue of God, is withheld within the Torah. And that tongue was what created and manifested all things. Get it? Uttered, manifested the tongues. And this, of course, continually existence of itself, manifestation by its own utterances. In other words, it's out of its continuing form of action, of verb, that things are manifested within our universe. Meaning that our universe is the creativity within our universe is a concept by its action. It's not taking a bunch of mold and putting a mold here and remolding again. It's the action of the mold constantly being remolded and shaped and formed. There is our view, though, we'll see things. This is not a vision or a finite perspective of our multi-universe, but the universe, that our universe in fact is in itself has an infinite capacity, which is in a constant movement. Hence the verb. Hence the energy, whatever shape or form. You know, within the physics, there is an understanding that we, in all elements, again, reiterate, in existence within our universe are nothing more than a conglomerate of energy in many multi-dimensional forms with a constant movement. Hence, in reality, again, what are we? We are a verb. All things are a verb. So, I reiterate, we are, in fact, what? Are we just, in fact, what we see? What really are we? What is our universe? Now, based upon our preconceived perceptions of a Newtonian logic, which I find fascinating because people still fall back to approaches like the carbon methods of, which I don't want to get into, but the carbon methods of climate change, which is illogical. They look at Newtonian aspects of everything in our environment, which is illogical, when Newtonian logic only works with mechanics, you know, making a car, you know, engine, things pull that, but in a universal reality, it doesn't apply. Newtonian logic does not work within electrons. Does not work with energy. Doesn't work with electromagnetic energy. Dark energy. These things do not apply when you go down to the basis of the reality of our universe. And that, in reality, we're basically energy. This is where Newtonian logic dissipated due to Einstein's approach of relativity. It just, like, was the nuclear bomb of understandings. Up until Einstein, people looked at things very Newtonian. After Einstein, he changed things the way people... We looked at things of approximation. He looked at things, created the idea that the space isn't from one line to another, but it's a curve, an approximation, which opened up even more doors to with what happened with quantum physics. With quantum physics saying the energy can be both particle and wave. Both. Approximation. Well, guess it's somewhere there. Again, it's not finite based. It is an infinite way of looking at things. We tend to look at our time, for example, very linear from one time to another. But here's an example of how that sort of doesn't make any sense. Here's why our time is illogical. If I were in Australia, or let's say here, example, I'm an airplane, and I go to Australia from, let's say, Los Angeles, and let's say the flight is, I'm just guessing, I think it's like 12 hours, 34 hours, I forget how much hours I flew there, too. Anyway, and yet, if I leave, let's say, the 26th of June, I will arrive on the 28th. I'll miss a whole day. Where did all that 24 hours go to? Yet, I only went there. It took me 17 hours. You see the illogic of our linear time? You know, our time is where our perception is. If you're, you know how they look at the clock and you say, oh, well, It's like right now 11:30 Pacific time. Where are you? Oh, your time is relative where you are. Get it? It's relative to where you are, where you perceive your time is. And yet we know that time can be adjusted based upon even if you're on a flight. I mean, there's observations that show that time is now called time-space. It is a dimension, a perceived dimension. Therefore, based if it is a perception and a perceived one, it's based upon what we assume to be the time. Therefore, it's not linear. It always moves forward. It doesn't go backward. That seems to be the only constant. Because everything moves forward is constantly moving. Now, or we assume it is. So anyway, in our own illusion of perception, we would have assumed that we are just like objects under like machine parts, like in Newtonian assumptions and logic. This, of course, is based upon what? Our sight. But like I said, from a physics understanding, we are more than an object. In fact, within the real understanding of biology and molecular biology, we are more than just simply mechanical parts. We are made up of molecules, atoms, space, assuming there is such a thing as space. That is constant movement, and there's energy going different patterns. In the reality of our making, we are, as well as everything in the universe, is more than just matter. We're all things. We're all elements. Every single item is energy. We're constantly in movement. Again, what are we? What is the universe? We are energy. We are all constant of movement of this energy. And again, this includes our very own souls. Even our higher selves, we are in fact nothing more than a verb. We are not a noun. That is really important to understand. If you see things and understand things for what the reality is, and you see yourself and the universe as not a noun and finite things, you'll become to the reality of what our universe really is, and the way you relate to the universe is going to be a lot different. We still think the terms of item is this and that, as opposed to a constant of movement. It's hard to see the same thing in that, but it's both. It's like particle and wave. We can be both particle and there's wave. It's hard for people to see that because they're still thinking just particle. And there are those who just think there's just wave. But it's particle and wave. That is the elixir. People think, oh, I've met people who are esoteric. Oh, this universe is an illusion. Really just, oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's an illusion itself. That's not acknowledging the particle. And yet those who just think DNA and the mechanics and we're just functional little mechanical parts and the DNA just building blocks, and they now their old system of understandings of DNA, they find out, oh, it's a blueprint of your body. Now they know it's not the blueprint, or it's a blueprint for your body to react in certain situations. It's really not, it's like almost like a communication device. There's energy that affects what blueprint within your DNA to use and not to use. You have like a whole map. DNA is made up of massive blueprints. Oh, you know, well, I want to use this blueprint to make your eyes blue. Oh, I want this one to make your eyes look better. Oh, I want to give this one to make you taller. Oh, I want to use this one. That is based upon what? The blueprint of reaction. It's just blueprints. It's not you. It's the blueprint of what you could possibly be. So in reality, we are nothing more than energy, again, at multi-frequencies, with a constant of movement, and changing, and adapting, and adjusting, and thinking, and processing, and dreaming, and breathing, and loving, and feeling, with a quantum variable. I mean, in reality, this is what we are. In reality, we are not nothing more than a verb. We are not a noun. So think about that. How do we approach things in humanity at large? I mean, look at how we approach the idea and understandings of God. We make God into some personification, a finite thing. We've done it for thousands of years. Whether it be an idol, or a statue, or a plethora of gods that we look at images, or we think of one, but it's separate from us, or we make a father and then make a son. Why do we do this? Because we're looking at things from a finite way of looking things, when that is not the reality. He got upset. In fact, I was just talking to my producer earlier. We were talking about certain things and concepts. And I started told some explanation of certain things, and the person got offended the way I said it, but it was sort of ironic. And it was basically comes to sort of funny because it comes to a light what I'm talking about here. There was a concept they were talking about, references of some scriptures. And I'll give you an example. He put out there that Talmud is talking about hate and negative and blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. And I says, well, you can find that in any scripture, you know, about killing and this and, you know, superiority complex. You'll find that in the Quran. You'll find that in the Bible. I'm sure you'll find it in other dogmas and other religions. You can find it in everything. And I said to him that it's all based upon everybody's, you know, BS. And somehow, I don't know how, but he evolved into, I made a reference to a Kabbalistical thing, how people take things and make them for what they really aren't. So he, right away, thinking he knows everything about Kabbalah, started on the attack and made a reference. As I had said that in reality we personify, for example, God and blah, blah, blah. In reality, I made a reference that God is both with us and around us in a universal way. Since the universe is God and we are part of God, then we are. That's literally in the Kabbalistic way of looking at God, at Ein Sof. That's an infinite understanding of God as everything, including ourselves. So he thought with his finite mind, that, oh, you're saying that every person is now a God. That's not what I said. I said everything is God. So there's 400 gods? No. I said everything is one God. God being together, one universe. How many universes are there? There's multi-universes? It's like infinite. It's, when I say one, it's meaning to be a one, that's actually literally what it comes from. To be one with God is to be one with the universe, is becoming, acknowledging that we are all of the same universe. That's actually the reality of the true understanding, the real understanding of Kabbalism and God. That's what the approach of Ein Sof is. There's no end. So he got the Kabbalah, blah, 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 is like the whore of Babylon, blah, blah, blah. And I studied Kabbalah for how many, 6 years, he was saying, blah, blah, blah. And I said nicely, well, maybe you didn't really learn it. He said, no, I know it, and I think it's all crap, blah, 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 whatever. Maybe, and I said maybe, and I put this in light, and you guys, everybody can take it for what it was, because I thought it was sort of bizarre. And because he was saying some very crude stuff, so I said, put it in the same perspective, since that's the way he was coming off. Because he was calling like the whore, and it's like screwing with the whore. So I said, well, maybe what you were taught, or assume you're taught, was like you're in a relationship with you thought was a girl for six some years, and then all of a sudden you find out that what you were taught, what you assumed was a girl that you were with, turned out to be not a girl but was a man, but had a, you know, was a transsexual and had a operation in hormones or whatever, and became physically a man. I mean, a woman. And you just found out now. And you've been being fucked over by a guy who you thought was a woman. He got so offended when I said that. He blocked me, took me off, and told a mutual friend, how did you make all of him make my friend? And I said to the friend, yes, the other day, he says, wow, that's bizarre. I was just talking like I asked her, well, what did he say? Well, I saw what you said. That was pretty heavy, what you said. And I said, well, did you read in context to what he said? She says, no. And I go, wow, isn't that interesting? Because he wanted to limit what I said to what he said because he was thinking in terms of finite way. He wanted to limit even in a finite approach to what happened and what I said and what he said so the other person would see a situation. And this is often what happens. People tend to want to fishbowl things into a solid concept perspective so they can manipulate so that you will believe their thing one way or another. Instead of really letting you experience it and making your own judgment. You know, it's like I often find that people, many out there who are proposing, I see a lot of information, you know, whether it's about Illuminati or anti-Zionist or anti-Islam or anti-Christian or anti-something, or, you know, and they'll put things out there, both pro and con, and put videos and this, and then you watch it, and they say, this is the truth, you can check out the facts, you don't believe me, check out the facts, and then you check the facts, and what you think are the facts, and you say, that's bullshit. And then the person's upset, what, you didn't see that? I says, no, I don't see that. They get sort of upset, because their perception, or their limitation of view, is limited to what they really want to see. That's the bull that I'm talking about. If humanity breaks out of from that limitation of what they see, then it'll be different. This is why I have problems with people like David Icke and Alex Jones and all these people who propose things out within humanity within a fishbowl context. It's like I did in my last show regarding to how people look at things of them and they. And they and them are part of us in reality. You know, the first thing that happens if you change, like for example in the Middle East, if the Muslims in particularly, and people don't like to hear this because it's not really PC or political, would not look at the people as them, but of all of us. They did not look at Jews as being separate, but part of them. They looked at Christians as part of them, but they're not being that. They're being indoctrinated that they're more superior, there's superiority above them. No different than, you know, the Christopher Columbus's days, or some Christians think that they're better, or even Jews are that think they're better. There is, but there's a plethora of that. This is why there's problems within Europe. Confrontations. And these separatist way of looking at things, of looking at us separately, as opposed to a verb, we're looked at ourselves as nouns, affects us as humanity at large. In Europe, what's happening today? In Asia. I mean, look at what really bothers me is everybody's focused on to European things and to the Middle East. And somebody said something really interesting. I think I was actually listening to Wesley Clark the other day, the general, or he was an ad general, and he said something, why there's so much focus on the Middle East is because of oil, but everybody forget, nobody wants to get involved with the issues of Africa, which are a lot more contentious. Nobody wants to get involved with Congo or atrocities and the murder and rape and all this stuff. Because there's no oil there. It's what their interest is. Everybody forgets about Asia. Nobody talks about China, Tibet. Nobody talks about Myanmar. Nobody talks about Kurdistan. What about the women in the Middle East? We have here and there. That's how many millions of women in Muslim countries are being subjugated to being second-class human beings. Why? Because it's that finite. If they looked at women being part of each other, we're all part of the thing, it wouldn't be separate. It would not be put this way. It's almost like we're being educated, re-educated in a finite way. The same thing happens within Thailand and Asia. I saw this documentary the other day. I just almost ran tears. Somebody, a friend of mine, told me to check it out. And it's called Bangkok Girl. Watch it, and you'll just like roll in tears afterward. Or at least I did. And showing how women there are, really have to be strong, and they're subjugated to a bad situation, you know. And people, if they open their mouths up, have problems. If you say something about the queen or say something about the government, you can get in real trouble. I mean, why the sex, you know, it's one thing to have a sex industry. It's one thing of having sex traffic. And then when there's one thing of, if a woman chooses to use sex to make money, that's one thing. But if she's forced upon doing it, that's a whole different thing. That's slavery. That's beyond exploitation. And what's happened over there is exploitation. And why it's like they're made like objects. They're made like finite pieces of material. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it is out of the mentality of a finite way of looking at things. Which here, again, shows you a polarity over there, which I'm not too on grips understanding myself. I'm trying to figure that out because of their understandings of Buddhism, and they welcome Buddhism in such a way which has an infinite approach toward a lot of things, have compassion. But in humanity at large, if we looked at things for what they are, I mean, look at our systems. We look at things in a finite way. We're purposely looked at things as a noun. We look at concepts now as a noun. You're a conservative. You're a liberal. You're a Democrat. You're a Republican. There's always this in them. They in us. Because that thing of a noun, from the noun becomes the adjective. But in reality, we're a verb. We're energy. Out of our mouths and our expressions and our actions is who we are. You are by what you do and not who you are. The old concept that you're a doctor because you were born a doctor or you're born a prince. Who the hell made Prince? Who made William the prince? Because he was born a prince? This is at the very core of our problem. Who the hell is the queen? Because she was born the queen? Did she do something to become a queen? No, she was born a queen. Her daddy was a queen, so we're looking at things as a noun. But in reality, that's both illogical and an illusion. And by continuing this illusion, we continue the problems with our own humanity. We have too much nepotism within our own society because born into it. You are by what you do, not what you happen to be. I mean, look at the Bushes. They got there by what? By who they were? By what they're born. Maybe the daddy did something to do it. The idea of the Illuminati of being bloodlines is not what they did. It's they are by their bloodlines. That's the theology. So think about that. And what is that reflection of humanity? Because humanity still thinks of itself in terms of a finite. You are by what you were born, not by what you are doing or do, which is the reality. It's by placing the illogical illusion that we're a noun, the illogical that you're it. It's not what or who, it's how. You are, in fact, a verb. You know, this is the problem we have in our society at large. I can give you instance on instance. In Latin America, the same. Why they have purposely pushed upon a mold to see a Jesus, a son of God, as a finite. There's a reason behind it. To keep that perpetuality of looking at things within a finite capacity. They make you feel separate. Again, finite capacity, a noun. They make you create this illusion that you're somehow separate from everything. They make you an individual, part of nothing, but you are just a, you know, even the words they use that are of a God, the Lord, which literally means like, you know, a ruler over you, which in reality doesn't make any sense, does it? Creators and the creation are one and the same. I mean, every place in society can show problems. Like, example, going back to Latin America, where there's, you know, a stronghold within, like, say, Catholicism, where there are images and things, and you have a priest and a church. And it's who you, it's not what you do, it's who you're born under. Why is there 1% owning everything? And then it's us against them. There's the, you know, even Chavez and them, they're the same because they have the same. It's just changing, you know, one corporation to a new corporation. It's them. It's not we. It's never been we. Because everything's looked in terms in our society is a verb, is a noun instead of the reality is a verb. So I ask, why do we in the humanity seem to consistently hold on to the illogical, finite, absurd view of ourselves, of the reality? I mean, perhaps our calamity of our humanity is that we are indeed living a lie. Thus, our fishbowl is filled to the brim of our own making. Isn't it time that we, humanity, see the truth for who we are? And that is, we are a verb. And with that, I want to thank everybody for listening, and my future listeners, and thanking BBS Radio for again producing my show. Love and light, and God bless you all, and thank you all again, and have an extraordinary weekend. God bless you, and all those in America, happy 4th July Day, and be safe and sane. Don't start shooting firecrackers and blowing each other up. Enjoy yourselves, God bless you all, and have a great day. Bye.